Welcome to Shnayim Mikra, the program sponsored by the Orthodox Union, OU.org, in which we study a piece of each week's Torah portion, Parshat HaShavua, focusing in on a separate aliyah each day, analyzing the text, and taking a look at some of the interesting nuances of the text. My name is Yitzchak Etshalom, and I am truly honored and privileged to be able to study Torah with you in this wonderful medium. Ve'ela todot Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham holid Yitzchak. I will share that I have a personal affinity and sense of connection with this parsha, todot Yitzchak. Ve'ela todot Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham holid Yitzchak. And of course, everybody points out on the spot the clear superfluity of the or superfluousness of the second half of this pasuk. Vayhi Yitzchak ben Avraham shana bekachtor Rivka bat Petuel ha'Arami. Mipadan Aram Achot Lavan Ha'arami Lo Leisha. There is clearly an emphasis on names in these two psukim. First of all, Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham Holid Yitzchak, and then Yitzchak ben Arba'im Shana, Rivka Bat Betuel Ha'arami, Mipadan Aram Achot Lavan Ha'arami Lo Leisha. If we pay close attention, we will find that the name Aram, in one form or another, shows up approximately five times in these two psukim, because Avraham is from Aram, and there's certainly an alliteration, if not more than that, there. And Yitzchak marries Rivka bat Petuel ha'Arami from Padan Aram, Achot Lavan ha'Arami lo leisha. So there is a sense here of connection to Aram, to the place of Aram, and the foreshadowing of the fact that he's marrying the sister of Lavan Ha'arami, Lavan, who will, of course, play a critical role later on in our story. Okay, that's the setting, the exposition. And now, Vayatar Yitzchak l'Adonai l'nochach ishto ki akarahi, Vayatar lo Adonai v'atar rivka ishto. So Yitzchak begs or pleads to Hashem, prays to Hashem in the presence of his wife. Why? Because she is an akara. And suddenly we're seeing a pattern, and this pattern is not surprising, because if we look back to the beautiful pasuk that ends that long chapter in Chayei Sarah, Yitzchak brought Rivka into the tent of Sarah, and he was comforted after the death of Sarah. We see already in two ways that Rivka is associated with Sarah, and now we find, of course we already knew this, Rivka comes from the same place as Sarah, and is related to Sarah. And we're not at all surprised that Rivka, like Sarah, is an akara, is a barren woman. We're starting to see, for the first time ever in our study of Tanakh, the beginning of patterns, family patterns, that will continue throughout our parsha, and we have much to share about that. In the meantime, Vayye'ater lo Adonai, it's a beautiful phrase, Vayye'atar Yitzchak l'Adonai, Vayye'ater lo Adonai, God responded to Yitzchak, Vatar Rivka Ishto, and Rivka became pregnant. If you note, this is the one time that somebody prays, at least in Chumash, prays for a child, as opposed to Sarai, who wants to have a child and brings Hagar into the circumstance. Avraham, who does not make that request, but points out to Hashem, he has no children. What's the point of the inheritance? And his response to being told he's going to have a child is by Yitzchak. Same with Sarai. Here Yitzchak prays for a child, and indeed Rivka becomes pregnant. And what she evidently doesn't know is that she has sons or children inside. They are moving around. This is a phrase, a very pregnant phrase, sorry for the pun, but it's a very deliberate pun. Which the commentary has gone all over the place in understanding what lama ze anochi, what does it mean? I have no reason to live. Why am I the only one who's subject to this? I've talked to other pregnant women and they don't suffer like this, etc. Vatelech lidrosh ad Adonai. So what did she do? She went off to seek God. And we find here a couple that immediately is devoted in a prayerful sense to their relationship with God, which we don't find in the case of other couples in the same way. Yitzchak prays directly, pleads directly to Hashem in her presence for a child, and she, when she is confused or exacerbated, exasperated about her pregnancy, comes to seek out God. Most of the Rishonim agree that what this means is she went to seek a Navi, Vayomer Adonai La. So God responded to her, which may mean, almost assuredly means, through a Navi, and told her, Shnei Goyim Vitnech, Shnei Le'umim Mimeayich Yiparedu. You have two nations in your stomach, and two peoples are going to separate from your Me'ayim, which means not only do you have two different nations in your stomach, in other words, the two children in your stomach are going to be the fathers of nations, but they're going to separate the minute they get out. In other words, immediately you're going to see them as being different. A third component is not only will they be different from each other, but they're not going to go their separate ways. They are going to contend with each other. V'rav ya'avod sa'ir, and in the beauty of the language, which translation just almost destroys, Rav ya'avod sa'ir could be read as the elder one will work for the younger one, or it could mean the elder one will subjugate the younger one. And indeed, both meanings are going to play out later on in our parsha in different ways. That's the prophecy that she has. Does she share this prophecy with Yitzchak? It doesn't seem like it. Not at all clear, but it doesn't seem like it. In the meantime, that's how what she's been told. So there's a four-stage piece to this. The first thing is, you have two children in your stomach, and they're not just children, they're the fathers of nations. Second thing is, they will separate at birth from each other. Third, they will not avoid each other, but contend with each other. And fourth, one of them will subjugate the other, and it's unclear which one. Back to the scene, Vayimlu'u yameh halaledet, so she had a full pregnancy. V'hinei tomim v'itna. Now the word v'hinei is an important word here, because the word v'hinei in narrative in Tanakh almost always means surprise. Surprise to somebody. Now, the fact that she was given this prophecy means either she didn't fully believe it and she's surprised to find twins, or more likely, she told no one else and they were surprised, notably Yitzchak was surprised to find twins in her stomach. Vayetzeh harishon admoni. Now we get a description. The first one comes out ruddy. Kulo kaderet seyar. He's like a cloak of hair. And they called him Esav. What's the name Esav? Asuri, already done, a well-done kid. He's fully baked, if you will. And then his brother came out. His hand is holding onto the heel of Esav. Esav's already got his name. So he's holding onto his heel, which already supports the prophecy of saying the two are going to wrestle with each other. And then we're shown the third piece of the prophecy, which is that will, as we find out later, that he is not ruddy in the same way that his brother is. Vayikra shmo Yaakov. So they called him Yaakov, which both means to follow after, to also act in sort of a tricky fashion, called Akov Yaakov, and associated also with holding onto the heel. And now the postscript of this is Yitzchak ben Shishim Shana Beledetotam. Yitzchak was 60 at the time. That's the first note that we get about how long this barrenness was, and we find out now that it was a 20-year barrenness. And now, finally, he's 60 at the time, which, by the way, remember that Avraham was 100 when Yitzchak was born. Avraham dies at 175, which means that Avraham is still alive at this point and has another 15 years to go. And Chazal indeed tell us that the next scene happened right after Avraham passed away to fulfill the promise that Avraham would not see the troubles that would befall his family in his lifetime. Vaygdalu ha-ne'arim. And we have what to say about the word ne'arim, but we're going to save that for our discussions in Parshat Vayishlach. Vaygdalu ha-ne'arim, vahi eitzav ish yodeh tzayid ish sadeh. So the ne'arim, the young men, grew. And now the third point of the prophecy is clear. Eitzav was an ish yodeh tzayid, meaning a man who knew how to hunt. The last person we heard about that, who had that ability, was a fellow named Nimrod. Not a sympathetic character in Parshat Noach. Ish Sadeh is a man of the field. Now, man of the field is a different story. Who was the last person that we knew who was a man of the field? Well, if you look back at the Parshat Chaye Sarah, we saw that Yitzchak was Yetzei Yitzchak Lasuach Basadeh. He was out in the field, and he's associated with the field. So it seems like Esav has some sort of an affinity to his father in his ways. V'Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev O'alim. Yaakov is a... Ishtam seems to be naive, seems to be wholehearted, perhaps, but Yoshev O'alim. So Yoshev O'alim, like many of the Rishonim point out, the simple reading of that is that he's a shepherd. which, if you think about it, puts him very much into his mother's camp, because as we will find when Yaakov runs to Laban, the family was involved, were herdsmen. And so what we seem to see here is that Esau from the get-go is like his father in some ways, and Yaakov from the get-go is like his mother. A pairing that will play out in the next pasuk, and then dramatically later on in the parsha. And this is a very difficult passage. Yitzchak Ahav. We're going to have to talk about the word Ahav here. But Yitzchak, for right now, will translate loved his Esav. He loved Esav. Kitzayin b'fiv. The simple read of that is because Esav was feeding him. But perhaps a more agreeable read that we have based on the last couple of psukim is he favored Esav because Esav was a hunter. Esav was somebody who was similar to Yitzchak, as it were. Rivka ohevet et Yaakov. And there seems to be no reason given, there seems to be no reason needed why Rivka ohevet et Yaakov. The question is, what does ohev here mean? So if you take a look at the beginning of Parsha Ki Tetzé, you'll find that there is a case of a man, what happens if a man is married to two women, achat ahuva v'achat snua. So there you'd have to translate that ahuva and snua does not mean loved and hated, rather preferred and less preferred. Same thing with Yaakov, Leah, and Rachel that we'll see in Parshat Vayitze. And here it seems to be the notion that Yitzchak favored Esav and Rivka favored Yaakov. Of course, they loved their children, but they favored one over the other because of whatever tendencies. In another place I've written about four different possibilities of why Yitzchak favored Esav and Rivka favored Yaakov. But in the meantime, that is the set. Yazid Yaakov, and from now on, that's how we'd read it. Interested readers should take a look at the very beginning of Sefer Malachi, see how this plays out in later history. Vayazid Yaakov Nazir Vayavoy Savin Asadev Vayev. So now there's a particular day. We're not told that, but we get the sense. Vayazid Yaakov Nazir. An interesting thing about the word Nazir is you hear the word Nazir, which is to cook some cooked items, and maybe in the back of your mind you hear the word Mezid, which is to act with deliberate malice. So it is Mezid is somebody who acts purposefully, but it's in a negative connotation. Question is, are these related at all? The reality is that they come from the same root, and the root is to kind of seethe over. So the same thing as you're boiling a pot and seethes over, a person seethes over and acts b'mezi. And Esav came from the field, and he was tired. Now, ayef, by the way, many times in Tanakh does not just mean tired, but it means hungry. And that, of course, will explain this, because there's a non sequitur. Esav coming back from the field should ask for a bed, not for food, if he's ayef. But ayef here doesn't mean tired, it means hungry. And now we get a little bit of a description of Esav as somewhat animalistic. Because he says, Hala'iteni, stuff down my throat. He says, na in Tanakh, remember, means now. Hala'iteni na, give me now, mean ha'adom ha'adom hazeh, from that red stuff. In other words, he was not into fine cooking, he didn't understand what to how to refer to the particular items he was getting. The red stuff. Ki ayef anochi, I'm hungry. Alken karash ma'adom. And now we have sort of an editor's footnote saying, that's why we all call him Edom. Esav hu Edom, which is a passage you find at the end of Vayishlach, with Toldot Esav, we now find out why he's called that. He's called Edom because of that famous story when he sold his birthright, when he couldn't even call the food by a name. Yaakov is not ready to give him food. Vayom Yaakov, michrach hayom et bechorat chali. Sell me today your bechorah. Which is a little strange because Esav and Yaakov are not heirs. They are children of a living man. So what's there to sell? It's a good question. Whether it means the Bechor had a particular position while father was alive, or is he selling futures, unclear. Probably the second. But Yaakov wants the rights to be the Bechor. And whether it's because the Bechor, as some contend, had certain spiritual rights in the family, or because they were going to be the ones who control the estate, control the destiny of the family, make the decisions for the family, either way, Yaakov wants him to sell it to him. He doesn't want it to give him to him and sell it to him. And as the Radak points out, what that means is, sell it to me for a fair price, then I'll give you the food. The food will be to seal the deal, not the price of the Bechorah. The famous adage of Esav selling his birthright for some porridge is probably not pshat. Esav's sense of nihilism here is clear. However, the simple read of this is it's just an impulse issue. He feels like he's going to die from hunger, so what's the point of a bechora? I'm not even going to live through this. The other possibility, as many of Rishonim point out, is I'm involved in a risky lifestyle. I'm a hunter. I could die any day. What's the point of me squirreling away a bechora? I need to eat today, and who knows if I'll be here tomorrow. In any case, Vayomer Yaakov v'shava li chayom, v'shava lo. So Yaakov says to Esav, you've got to take an oath. Now notice, michra chayom, yishava li chayom, meaning I'm not going to give you this food until you agree to sell it to me and take an oath to that effect. I'm kor b'chorah told Yaakov, and he sold the b'chorah. And then Yaakov natan la'Esav, lechem u'nezid al-ashim, so he gave him some bread and this cooked porridge of lentils. The Midrash, of course, famously says this is the day that Avram died, and Yaakov was preparing the food for Yitzchak, traditional to have food that is round like eggs or lentils to give to a mourner. And now notice, Vayocha Vayesh Vayakum Vayelach Vayivez Esavat HaBechorah. These five short verbs in a row. He ate, he drank, he got up, he walked away, and he degraded the Bechorah. Give you a sense of Esav as a man of action, and I do not mean that in a praiseworthy sense, but rather be somebody who acts and does not necessarily think. That's the end of that particular story. The next Aliyah, the rest of the Aliyah is the next five Psukim, which take us to a different scene. There's a serious problem with the scene, but we'll only address it in the next discussion, because this podcast is already near its limit. And we now get a scene again, where we find an evidently a repetition of the scenes happening in Avraham's life, repeating with Yitzchak. Again, the patterns, Vayhi Ra'av Ba'aretz. As a matter of fact, it's almost at the beginning of the Avraham narrative that we hear about a Ra'av, and Avram has to leave, goes down to Mitzrayim, the whole scene with Sarai. And in this case, Yitzchak, at the introduction of his family, there's a famine. Of course, the difference is, in Yitzchak's case, he already has children. Okay? We'll have to see, at least reading the text sequentially, that's what comes out. And the text immediately connects the two events. This is the famine, so we say the first famine since that first famous famine that led Avram to Egypt. So what does Yitzchak do? He follows father's footsteps. Now why does Yitzchak go to Gerar? Gerar is on the coast. If you're in the Negev, your best way to get to Egypt is directly through the Sinai. The answer is that's not the case. You are not just going on your own. You're going with a wife. You're going with children. You're going with perhaps some sheep, perhaps some servants, perhaps. But in any case, you're going. And going through the desert is not a smart idea, especially if you don't have a whole lot to take with you because of a famine. What is the preferred way to get to Egypt? You go directly to the coast, and then you take Via Maris, Derech Eretz Plishtim, the coast road that goes all the way along the coast and goes all the way to El Arish, into the Nile Delta, into Egypt. So he first has to cut over to the coast to go down, and that's how he goes to Avimelech. And because Yitzchak himself is royalty, and his father had a relationship with evidently this Avimelech's father, because Avimelech is a title name, he's going there to on his way to Egypt. God appears to him. This is the first time God speaks directly to Yitzchak. You don't go down to Egypt. Now, there's several ways to read this. One way to read this is you're different than Avraham. The other way to read it might be this is what Avraham should have done. Take a look at the Ramban, the beginning of Lecha, that we talked about several weeks ago. Instead, Shchon ba'aretz asher amar lecha, you stay in the land that I tell you. Asher amar lecha is evocative of Avram's call to go to the land asher areka. Gur ba'aretz hazot, travel around. In other words, be a visitor here. Ve'yem chav arachaka, I'll stay with you and I'll bless you. Ki lecha ulezaracha etenet kol aretzot ha'el. All of these lands, this whole area will be yours and your children's. Hakimotet ha'shua shenishpat el mavicha. I'm going to maintain the shvua that I gave to your father. And by the way, from here on in, throughout Jewish history, everything is about the avot. In Avram's case, it's about him, because there are no avot. Terach just doesn't rate. But the minute Yitzchak's on the scene, the promise is to take care of Yitzchak, to keep the promise that he gave to Avraham. And then he says, I will multiply your seed like the stars in heaven. Again, the promise to Avraham. And I'll give you this land. Again, the two famous promises of Bereshit. Zera and Eretz, children and land. And through your children, all of the nations of the world will be blessed. Again, a bracha that evokes the Akedah, evokes Avraham. Why is that? Ekev asher shema Avraham koli, because Avraham listened to my voice. Vayishmor mishmarti, mitzvotai, chukotai, v'torotai. Of course, midrashim abound on what this means. A simple read of it is that the particular commands that I gave to Avraham and the message that I wanted him to get across, he was zealous to do, and therefore as a reward, I am going to make sure that you are the source of blessing for the rest of the world. And of course, when Yaakov comes along, the schut is the schut of Avraham and Yitzchak. When Moshe comes along, it's the schut of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The merit is always a merit that nods to the earlier generations. We'll stop here and pick it up with the second Aliyah. In the meantime, everybody should have a wonderful day.